Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members and everyone, please mute your mics. This remote hearing is being conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at House Television Webcast. With that, I wanted to ask the Committee Legislative Assistant to take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor, present. Vice Chair Jay Shong.
Present.
Vice Chair Jay Shong, present. Reed Hamilton. Baker. Dabney,
present.
Dabney, present. Frankie,
present.
Frankie, present. Greenman.
Greenman, present.
Greenman, present. Haley. Jurgens,
present.
Jurgens, present. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Katiza Watun.
Present.
Katiza Watun, present. Olsen.
Present.
Olsen, present. Tujong. Lead Hamilton. Baker. Haley. Tujong. Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Mr. Chair, it appears that Mr. Representative Hamilton is here, but maybe can't get his sound to work. So he is here.
Thank you so much, Mr. Reese. I saw Lead Hamilton. So with that, members, we have a quorum present. I would like to now entertain a motion to approve the minutes for March 10th.
So I'll move, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Jay Zhong moves the approval for the minutes for March 10th. Any discussion, members? Any discussions? See none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. See none. The motion prevails. The minutes for March 10th are now approved. With that, members, we do have four bills. The first bill before us is from Representative Lippert. It's House File 2044. I now move House File 2044 to be re-referred to the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. With that, I wanted to welcome Representative Lippert to the committee and explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We need to do an even better job of mobilizing funds to create the changes that will improve people's lives, save people money, and help us address the climate crisis. For example, though current energy efficiency programs and weatherizing programs make a difference, there's still so much more need. And I see this clearly in the Latinx communities in Montgomery and Northfield in my district, in other households with low incomes in town, and in households I see out in the country with straw bales around the foundations of their homes. Leveraging more funds for energy efficiency would be a great economic development tool, providing good family-sustaining jobs in rural areas, exurban areas, in the suburbs and cities too. Energy efficiency is just one underserved market, one gap the Innovative Finance Authority could step into to fund projects that currently aren't being funded and to create economic development all across the state. House File 2044 creates a task force to establish the Innovative Finance Authority as an independent nonprofit organization in Minnesota. I'll read from lines 4.1 to 4.5, outlining the purpose. When incorporated, the authority's purpose is to accelerate the deployment of clean energy and other qualified projects by reducing the upfront and total cost of their adoption, which it achieves by leveraging existing public sources and additional private sources of capital through the strategic deployment of its public funds in the form of loans, credit enhancements, and other financing mechanisms. There are 20 institutions like this in 12 other states. They typically leverage between $3 and $8 for every dollar they invest. No general fund money will be used to fund the Innovative Finance Authority. One-time funding of $10 million from the Renewable Development Account will be used to capitalize the IFA. There's also momentum in Washington, D.C. to create a clean energy accelerator to help capitalize institutions like this. And passing this bill will make sure that we're well-positioned as a state to receive those funds. The bill also outlines the task force membership, which includes the deed and commerce commissioners or a designee. The McKnight Foundation recently completed a study on the potential of a clean energy accelerator like this in Minnesota, and found it would be very beneficial. And we followed the advice of the study and created an independent nonprofit rather than a public or quasi-public institution. We've also worked closely with the St. Paul Port Authority, the Center for Energy and the Environment, current lenders in the clean energy lending space to make sure this institution adds value and capacity and doesn't supplant any work that's already being done very well in Minnesota. So this is an energy efficiency and clean energy accelerator, an equity driver, and it will support economic development from border to border in Minnesota. And with me to say more is Jeremy Kaling.
Mr. Kaling, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your affiliation for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Jeremy Kaling. I'm an attorney at Avizon Legal in Minneapolis. I help lead our Impact Council practice, where we work across the country with projects, investors, and companies focused on sustainability and social impact to mobilize resources, both public and private resources, to advance the public interest. I've personally facilitated in the last decade $293 million in clean energy projects for underserved markets, primarily through private financing made possible by small and discrete public actions. Sometimes those actions include project incentives, and they often include and require specific technical assistance to attract that customer-friendly financing that's structured in a way that meets the overall needs and requirements of a project owner, whether it's an affordable housing operator, a farmer seeking to implement energy savings or best practices, best management practices to reduce nutrient pollution into a stream, or a large business seeking to find capital to do process improvements and put solar as the capstone on their roof. As a former legislator from rural and exurban Chisago County and previous vice chair of the East Central Regional Development Commission, I've seen a lot of otherwise attractive projects and investments in energy efficiency and renewables, like Representative Lippert shared, in water technology and economic development opportunities. I've seen a lot of these good ideas not get developed and thus jobs not created because of this lack of technical assistance and because the existing financing lending tools don't quite match what it takes to move a project forward. I think the market segments, as Representative Lippert shared, that could be addressed by the Innovation Finance Authority include affordable housing and rental housing, not just in the metro, but in greater Minnesota as well, in rural industrial energy savings projects, in farmer-owned clean water projects, and much more. The thing that I really appreciate about House Bill 2044's approach is that while other states have pursued a green bank that is a new public entity, whether it is a whole agency or a quasi-governmental agency that's sort of, you know, a foot on a boat, foot on the dock, by charging this task force that's evenly balanced and represents or includes stakeholders across the landscape, and charging that task force to create a new independent nonprofit, but ensuring the folks who've been involved in the agencies and outsiders who've been involved in the work to date, think Sunrise and Bremer Banks, think Center for Energy and Environment, St. Paul Port Authority, Rural Finance Authority, you name it. By creating a new nonprofit organization that is independent with one-time money, but reporting to the legislature ensures that we are truly filling those gaps of underserved markets and focus on economic development broadly. I think this approach is unique to Minnesota and makes a lot of sense and truly can be focused on that gap filler role to advance underserved markets. And I think the last thing I'll say, having worked in this space for 15 years and been in y'all's seats as legislators thinking about, especially in the jurisdiction of this committee, that by having Deed engaged as a member of the task force and the commissioner's representative likely serving on the board, making sure that we're integrating the diverse workforce opportunities and the ladders and pathways to prosperity for those who've not yet had enough access. I think the structure can really make that possible, and I'm bullish about it and happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kellen, for your testimony. I appreciate the input that you have given to this committee. I just wanted to acknowledge that Representative Baker, Tu Zhong, and also Representative Haley are all in attendance. With that, members, any discussions? Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On lines 7.7, it's a blank appropriation. What's the ask as far as the financial request here?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, it's a $10 million appropriation request from the Renewable Development Account.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I wonder if it's appropriate. Do we have our targets yet for this committee? And will we have an overview as far as the budgets that we have jurisdiction on?
Lead Hamilton, we don't have the targets yet, but we'll be getting soon. And this bill is not going to be impacting our targets. So just wanted to really confirm with also Representative Lippert to repeat his earlier statement, if he can express this bill where it's going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the motion was for referral back to climate and energy. It needs to make a stop in commerce too. So those are its main stops.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The next person is Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lippert. Just a couple quick questions. My first question is, Representative Lippert, why set this up as a nonprofit versus public or quasi?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie. So the McKnight Foundation did a study on a green bank in Minnesota, and I carried legislation related to that study, and they were looking at the best model, the most appropriate model for Minnesota, and their recommendation was a private nonprofit rather than a public or quasi-public model for Minnesota. They thought that would have the most flexibility and be able to fill gaps the best, so we followed that model in this legislation.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question, if you would, Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert. It talks about in subdivision 3, additional authorized activities on line 5.16, the authority is authorized to, number one, engage in any activities of a Minnesota nonprofit corporation operating under this chapter 317A. What might some of those any activities be?
Representative Lip.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie. And I'll just make a brief comment and let Jeremy Kalin add to it. My sense is that we want in statute that this would have the freedom and flexibility and authority of any nonprofit in Minnesota that would be able to operate that way. But I'll let Mr. Kalin respond to if he has something to add.
Mr. Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lippert, Representative Frankie. I'm glad you asked the question. My practice includes advising and representing nonprofits under the 317A chapter. And so the authority will be able to hire staff, make arrangements and agreements with third parties in terms of being able to receive capital or funding and put in a pool and relend. Could actually end up getting chartered, as you see in line 6.1, as a community development financial institution, but generally only operate within the parameters of being a nonprofit organization incorporated under Chapter 317A. And then seek the 501c3 tax exempt designation from the IRS. But as you think about a nonprofit organization, in the classic sense, Representative, that's what the authority will have the power to do.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lippert. I have some questions specific to the RDA and just what your intentions are long-term with that fund. What's the current dollar amount that exists in the RDA account.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Haley, I don't have that dollar amount in my head. I think I saw...
Representative Lippert, can we ask the staff to look into that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Who wants to take that note? Ms. Pickle?
Mr. Chair and members, let me just pull up my information right now. I believe that there is roughly $60 million in fiscal year 2022, but let me get this. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, can I have a follow-up as long as Ms. Beckwell is looking into that?
Go ahead, Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If she could also tell us then how much money gets allocated annually into that fund. To my knowledge, the money allocated into the fund comes from the fees that are paid by Xcel Energy for the dry cask storage. And this fund has been used for other purposes in the past. Last year, we passed a significant bill and a clean energy project for Prairie Island. Again, they're the ones living with the dry cask storage next to their home. So I'm just concerned again about sort of raiding this fund for other purposes than what it was intended to, and that once something is created like the nonprofit that you're suggesting, Representative Lippert, you know, what happens year after year after year? I mean, you're thinking that you are always going to come back then and take additional money from the RDA to keep this nonprofit going?
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Haley. Important question. The renewable development account, I served on the Energy Committee in this, when it was then the Renewable Development Fund with even more challenging governance structure than was reforms done in the last decade. As you're absolutely correct, the fund was established, I think, in the 1994 settlement around dry cask storage. And then the statute updated recently after a state auditor report. And if you're interested, the auditor report might be quite on point. We did, at Representative Lippert's request, I did chat with Mr. Eliff from House Research, who works on the energy space, specifically about the reformed purpose or updated purpose of RDA spending. And it is to deploy clean technologies across the state and to be used as economic development. In fact, as the spirit of the original settlement that the legislature adopted in the 90s. As Representative Lippert further referenced, this one-time commitment of $10 million will be almost entirely committed to loan loss reserve and credit enhancement funds. And I believe in the legislation, you can read that the authority is charged to, as an independent organization, to become self-surviving, self-funding through small economic development project fees, as economic development projects, as this committee knows, is conventional in line there. So it also allows it to easily accept philanthropic and foundation dollars going forward.
I will now go back to the nonpartisan staff, Ms. Beckel. You're muted.
Mr. Chair and members, I apologize. My estimate was significantly off. For fiscal year 2022, the available resources in the RDA are $96.5 million. Then the budgetary balance, so what's remaining after what is already in law as being paid for 2022 is roughly $75 million. The budgetary balance going forward for 23, $85.5 million, 24, $111.5 million, and for 2025, $139 million roughly. And to speak to Representative Haley's question, yes, the funds that are in the RDA are from the Xcel Energy paying funds into this account for each cask. For each cask of spent nuclear fuel that are stored both in Monticello and at Prairie Island. I can give you the estimate for how much will be coming in 2023. They anticipate $35.5 million, 2024, $35.5 million, and 2025, $37 million. And that again is linked to the number of casks of spent nuclear fuel at those locations.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bickle. Representative Harrell.
Thank you, Ms. Bickle, for the information. And thanks to the testifier as well for clarifying. And Representative Lippert, just I will be a no today. I need some more research with the stakeholders. Again, since this is the revenue generated, this account is from my community and others, but I need to do much more follow-up on the long-term situation there. So thank you for the chance to ask the questions, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to kind of boil this down and make sure that I understand it. These funds, these won't be grants, correct? These will be loans made for the projects. Is that accurate?
Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens. The first priority is to help projects happen that wouldn't normally happen just through technical assistance, the sort of economic development owner rep role that happens on the ground, but with expertise in these technology sectors. The second is where loan loss reserve or other credit enhancement is needed just to backstop a portion of a project. For instance, we know in affordable housing, there's a little bit of a challenge in shaking loose a few projects that way, where the bulk of it is private loans and the public money will sit in a loss reserve position, not actually committed to the project. There may be opportunities where none of that ladder of priority end up saying, you know, in owner-occupied housing on our tribal nation lands that for some reason we can't make the others work, that we might end up doing direct lending, but not even grants. It's hard to imagine ever letting dollars out just as a simple, you know, giveaway grant incentive, because there's plenty of that happening in other resources. We just want to fill the other gaps that are missing, Representative.
Okay, and follow up, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kalin, I didn't serve with you when you were in this body, but I did meet you in Cottage Grove a few years ago. We were talking about, I think, solar panels on the roof of the city hall or something like that. But these would not, you kind of touched on this, these funds would not be competing with private lenders, they would be supplementing potentially private lenders. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Kim.
Representative Juergens, yes. That's accurate.
Representative Juergens.
And those that we, when there is a loan, then is that's a state obligation, correct? The state of Minnesota then would hold that obligation.
Mr. Kim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Juergens, no. That's the entire goal of this structure, is to not put the state at risk, to use the special account. Representative Haley asked about the renewable development account as a one-time commitment and have it sit there as a pot that actually can grow and as more funds are accrued and from project-based revenue and philanthropic sources, et cetera. But to mobilize private capital and only where needed, it's actually that nonprofit organizations' capital now that would be lent out rather than any sort of state obligation. So the purpose, the structure is really to keep a very clear firewall there that's separate from general obligation or even special revenue or other appropriation bonds that the state might issue for other reasons, that we're able to do a really streamlined, like the Cottage Grove project, really streamlined approach with that flexibility and no state dollars.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kalin.
Thank you so much, Representative Beck.
Mr. Chair, maybe this is a question, maybe for Mr. Kalin. I've formerly served on the Energy Committee last couple of years, and I know with the RDA account, that's all brought money in through the Xcel Energy customers and their rates. Minnesota has really lost our edge with our advantage to rates in Minnesota when it comes to comparing our themselves to other states in the country. We have lost that below the national average. Now we're above the national average a bit, quite a bit, actually. And it's a very concerning thing to us, looking at the discussion about affordable and reliability. My question is, I think in this, when I look through the bill, I don't see anything that focuses in on the footprint of Xcel. Is this going to be just for the Xcel Energy customers that have contributed to the fund, or getting the $10 million request from that fund? Is that where that footprint is sort of locked into, or is this actually expanding more than that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Go ahead, Mr. Baker. I had this very question for Mr. Eliff, as Representative Lippert and I were working on that particular question. And, you know, it's a policy question for the Renewable Development Account writ large. And so the limitations to which any RDA appropriations are subject would apply here. Mr. Eliff tells me that that it is not an Xcel territory only obligation. And so it's important to have this project be supported and apply across the entire state, so that every Minnesotan has access to that technical assistance and the economic development opportunity. If this committee or another committee should see fit to pledge additional general obligation dollars to, on top of that, we could certainly put it general fund dollars. We could certainly put it to significant work. I'm sure the authority could as well on top of that. But my understanding is that no geographic limitation or service territory is going to apply here.
Representative Baker, any follow-up?
Well, just a quick one. I see Mr. Eliff put his pinky finger up for a second, then put it back down. There it is, back up again. I wanted to give, if I could get a clarification of a very smart guy about this. So I appreciate that, and then I'll let it go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well said. So we'll go to Mr. Eliff, and then we'll go to the closing remarks. Go ahead, Mr. Eliff, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Let me read you the exact language referring to here, so everybody understands.
One second. Can you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yeah. Yes.
Please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, yes. Bob Eliff, House Research Department.
You may.
My name is Bob Eliff. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading from Section 116C.779, Subdivision 1. It's the section that established the Renewable Development Fund, and it says as follows, and this is a quote, funds in the account may be expended only for any of the following purposes. One, to stimulate research and development of renewable energy, electric energy technologies. Two, to encourage grid modernization, including but not limited to projects that implement electricity storage, load control, and smart meter technology. And three, to stimulate other innovative energy projects that reduce demand and increase system efficiency and flexibility. Expenditures from the fund must benefit Minnesota ratepayers receiving electric service from the utility that owns a nuclear-powered electric generating plant in the state or the Prairie Island Indian community or its members. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, this paragraph says that the use of this fund must benefit Xcel Electric customers, but not exclusively. And I'd also point out that if you look at the language of the appropriation, it has language that has been written very, very often, notwithstanding this section of law, because some of the activities of the authority may not qualify under this language, or also maybe agriculture or water quality. What that says is that these precepts, these provisions, don't necessarily apply to the expenditures made by the authority.
Thank you so much for that statement. So with that, I wanted to give the bill author, Representative Lippert, to give us a closing remarks, and we'll take the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I would just simply add that, so I represent part of Xcel territory, and this bill would benefit members of my district and my community, but it would benefit others across the state. as well. So I think it fits squarely in the purposes Mr. Ema described. This is, I appreciate your time and ask for your support. I think this would be a great bill for Minnesota going forward.
Thank you so much, Representative Lippert, and to the testifiers. Now the Committee Legislative Assistance, Mr. Chavez, will take the role.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Chair Noor, aye. Vice Chair Zhejiang.
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhejiang, aye. Lead Hamilton.
No.
Lead Hamilton, no. Baker.
Baker, no.
Baker, no. Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, no.
Frankie, no. Greenman.
Greenman, aye.
Greenman, aye. Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Juergens.
Juergens, no.
Juergens, no. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Katizo Atun.
Aye.
Katizo Atun, aye. Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Toujong.
Aye.
Toujong, aye. Mr. Chair, the motion prevailed with 8 ayes and 5 noes.
With 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Representative Lippert, you're on your way. As the motion renewed is to refer this bill to Climate and Energy Finance and Policy. So thank you. The next bill we have is 1999 with Representative Agbaje. So welcome back to the committee. I will move House File 1999 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and glad to be presenting in front of the committee again. So today I'm presenting House File 1999. It seeks $15 million to support small BIPOC-owned businesses across Minnesota. The purpose of the bill is to aid in the development of a growth fund that can support businesses into the future with access to capital while leveraging non-state partnership dollars. So MITA will be the grant recipient, and they have a track record of providing grants and technical assistance to these small businesses over the years. And such assistance includes helping business owners make connections, obtain financing, earn a minority business enterprise certification, and get strategic business consultants to move their businesses forward. With that, I do have a number of testifiers with me, so I'll actually turn it over to them to speak more to the bill's impact and the importance of this bill to small businesses within the community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Agbaje. The first person I have is Mr. McLean. McLean, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Warren McLean. I'm president of the Northside Economic Opportunity Network, NEON, and I'm also chair of the Catalyst Group. Catalyst was started in 2015 by MITA, and they had commissioned a study about minority and BIPOC businesses. What we found was that the study was commissioned by or performed by Accenture, and the study found that minority business development system was fragmented and poorly organized, underfunded, and lacked capital. It was segregated from the majority business development system. It didn't share information, clients, or capital resources. It could not support a critical mass of BIPOC businesses that have a large-scale impact on wealth and employment equality. From that, the Catalyst Group was formed. It's now developed to a high-functioning business support ecosystem. It increases the quantity and quality of stage-appropriate resources for BIPOC businesses. We reframe the way that BIPOC businesses are viewed away from a charity lens to one that recognizes value creation, and the ultimate goal is to create and support healthy, growing BIPOC firms that generate good jobs, create wealth, and contribute to the state's GDP. Last year, the Catalyst Group provided support to more than 5,000 clients and provided more than 21,000 hours of technical assistance. We also introduced the Minnesota Inclusive Growth Fund. This fund has generated interest from the philanthropic and private sector, and we'd like to see it leverage resources from the state. One of the things that we found that this fund will be used to really help BIPOC businesses grow and develop out of the pandemic, as well as the civil unrest that occurred last year. This fund will not only be limited to the Catalyst members, but will also support women-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, and businesses owned by disabled individuals. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. The next person is Debo. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Farrell Debo. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for giving me this opportunity. I'm with ITC Transit. We're a Type 3 school transportation based in St. Paul and service school districts throughout the metro area, including Ramsey, Hennepin, Dakota, and Washington County, and many more. We employ over 30 drivers who service homeless or highly mobile students, where the, as you guys know, the big yellow buses cannot get. We are in those niches to make sure the students are transported to the school so that they can get their education. Families are very highly dependent on us, especially one just out of economics, they cannot take the children from home to school. However, during the COVID-19, the restriction has dramatically crippled us and brought our revenue down while, you know, we still have to maintain our bills. But because of that, we had to lay off many of our employees who depend on this work to provide for family and their community. While we've been supported by organizations like AADS and securing some finances to make sure that we're barely keeping up, a lot of businesses have also shut down, and this bill would be very instrumental for us as we continue. The schools are opening up and students are getting back to school, so we are hoping to recruit back those who were laid off and then also hire more drivers to support our community. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Debo. The next person is Mr. Jimenez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Henry Jimenez, Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center and a member of Catalyst. I also serve as the Vice Chair. For years, our partners have come together to support the capital and technical assistance needs of BIPOC small businesses throughout the state. Like all of you, we are very much aware of the everyday needs of small businesses. Last year, we focused on ensuring that hundreds of small businesses access resources and funding needed to stay solvent. The Latino Economic Development Center alone is responsible for over 400 businesses securing over $12 million in emergency relief funding, and we did it while also addressing barriers our clients were facing both linguistically and culturally. LADC and Catalyst partners know well the need of our clients to access funding. This is not a new need, but one that has become even more apparent in the last year. Prior to the pandemic, our clients had a hard time accessing capital for their growing businesses. This hasn't changed during the pandemic, and it won't change after it if we don't do anything about it. We all know that our small businesses need, in Minnesota, they need patient capital along with technical assistance. Catalyst partners have worked hard to help start or expand thousands of small businesses. From day one of this pandemic, we knew that our clients would need access to grants and loan products that were favorable to them to keep their business solvent. So we put our heads together and went to work as a coalition who has always put our clients first over individual organization growth. We decided to establish the Minnesota Inclusive Growth Fund. We have come together to raise funds that will have an even bigger impact among small businesses in Minnesota than we would have had alone. We continue to secure philanthropic and private funding, but as you know, we can't do this alone. We need our state to help us with this. We are here to ask you to invest in the Minnesota Inclusive Growth Fund. State funding would leverage our efforts in growing the fund to ensure we get more capital into the hands of Minnesota small businesses. The fund would be accessible to small businesses across the state of Minnesota, as well as other originating organizations, making this truly an inclusive fund and innovative both in Minnesota and the country. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I urge you to support House File 1999 to invest in BIPOC small businesses, to make a significant investment to ensure more small businesses have access to patient capital and are able to grow the Minnesota economy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. The next person is Ms. Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for giving me an opportunity to speak today. My name is Jackie Coleman, and I am owner, president, and CEO of Ingensa. And what we do is master planning or facility project planning for districts throughout the state of Minnesota. So basically, we create safe and healthy environments for students. 2020 was a really good year for us in the beginning prior to COVID. Post-pandemic, a little more challenging working with school districts. While we had a lot of work and a lot of clients because of COVID, that work was placed on hold. So a lot of revenue and financing was delayed. Funding actually will really help us realize our growth plan that we haven't been able to realize because of those delays. And really, the funding will enable us to create jobs, not here just locally, but also throughout the state of Minnesota, primarily in rural areas. And with that, thank you again, and I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. The last testifier on my list is Mr. Ticey. Please welcome and introduce yourself for the record and proceed. You're muted. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and support. My name is TJ Ticey, and I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for Tri Construction. We are a small and growing GC, general contractor, with a specialty in drywall construction located in North Minneapolis. As a union contractor, we take pride in being members of the Carpenters, Painters, and Labor Union. We have a team of about 40 employees currently, with opportunities to bring on even more as key projects begin. We have a strong working relationship with NEON and have utilized their consulting services to improve organizational capacity, and we have a financial relationship with the Community Reinvestment Fund. Both these agencies have assisted us in growing our business. Tri Construction has been involved in the community rebuilding efforts since the George Floyd killing. We were directly involved in cleanup efforts on Broadway and Lake Street. We were a part of construction teams that completed the reconstruction and repair work on Cub Foods, Target, and the demolition, temporary bank trailer construction, and the planned rebuild of the U.S. Bank property on Lake Street. Our biggest challenge is gaining access to capital to finance our current and anticipated growth in revenue. Like many BIPOC-owned businesses, we do not have access to capital or those banking relationships like our mainstream competition. We need access to capital to not only finance new projects that we're receiving, but to invest in the company, to hire additional resources with advanced skill levels to do our work. We need capital to invest in technology as well as our people to guarantee our ability to perform in these opportunities that we've earned. Companies like U.S. Bank, the Phillips Family Foundation, Target, and Cub have committed to work with BIPOC businesses, and we want to be able to work with them to honor those commitments. Access to capital at reasonable terms are needed so that we can continue to create jobs, grow our business, and to improve our communities. Mr. Chair, and to your committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I think we have had that statement on many fronts, access to capital and also reasonable time. So it's something that we will be looking into as we deliberate before the end of this session and ensuring that we provide the support that is needed by our businesses who have been hit hard by COVID-19 and some of them truly by the civil unrest that happened in Minneapolis. That's a conversation we will continue to have. With that, I open up for discussion. I see Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for bringing the bill forward, Representative Abadji. I'm not sure who can answer this question, so I'll throw it out there. And one of the testifiers, I think it was Mr. McLean, you know, said the challenge sometimes is that our efforts to fund businesses are very bifurcated and a streamlined process is you know, hard to produce. So I'm wondering, we have a couple other bills coming up, one from Representative Greenman for the NDC. And I visited the NDC, and I believe Mr. Jimenez and I, we've had some conversations about that. And so if if somebody can give me an example, if I'm a minority business owner, where do I go first? And how do I know if I'm getting money, or would the NDC fund me? Would this new Minnesota Inclusive Growth Fund be a resource? Would Catalyst be a resource? Can you just walk me through what that looks like? And then secondly, Mr. Chair, maybe this is follow-up for the committee. I would like to know from Deed, you know, how we have funded these various different mechanisms in the past. And that would probably help to give us a better idea of, you know, what's been working and, you know, what do we need to change to make things work better for minority business. Thank you.
If I may start with Mr. McLean, and then I will ask Deputy Commissioner McKinnon just to walk us through some of the programs through Deed. Mr. McLean.
Thank you, Chairman Knorr. Catalyst is a group of six organizations, NEON, Northside Economic Opportunity Network, Community Reinvestment Fund, Latino Economic Development Center, African Development Center, and African Economic Development Solutions. We meet on a weekly basis. So if a client comes to us and they need support, depending on what the need is, we will work with the other organizations within the group to develop, and as we stated here, age stage appropriate resources. So for instance, as Mr. Ticey indicated, NEON and Community Investment Fund work together on supporting his organization. They came to us with a capital need. We knew that we didn't have the scale to support them, but we provided the TA, but we brought in Community Reinvestment Fund as an organization that could provide the capital. And we work together continually on that. And that's how Catalyst tends to function. And we have, like I said, regular communication with each other. So we know who our clients are, where the needs are, and that's how we support each other.
I would like to go to Deputy Commissioner McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development at Deed. To Representative Haley's question, how Deed works with a lot of these organizations. We have a variety of programs. I guess the first that I would just mention is our technical assistance programming. We run some competitive grants that provides funding to a lot of these same organizations, basically to provide that technical assistance for BIPOC businesses, underserved businesses. And oftentimes they also have access to what we call our Emerging Entrepreneur Fund, which is capital that we provide the nonprofits. It's about a $5 million loan fund right now that gets a $1 million appropriation every year that we make available to the nonprofits for their own lending purposes. And so we have a great relationship with a lot of these organizations. Of course, they're all recipients of either one or both of the two programs that I had just mentioned. And we continue to have outreach with them. In fact, we just opened up our Emerging Entrepreneur Loan Program for applicants, which we're required to do by law. And so we hope to have a number of lenders come back and potentially add some new ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Haley. You're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll hold for now. You can go on to other members.
Thank you. Representative Joggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure, it sounded like Representative Haley asked this question, but I'm not sure if I heard an answer. Has the appropriation ask in this bill is $15 million. How does that compare with past funding in the program? I don't think I heard it. Maybe I missed it. And then what are the results of the prior funding? Do we have any, can we point to actual, return on investment, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. But what have we received in return for past funding?
Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, have we ever funded the cut list, and what is the track record on that?
Mr. Chair and members, we have not funded the Catalyst Group. However, we funded many of the individual organizations, including NIDA, with a different appropriation over the years. I think that was maybe 4 years ago. And yes, every year we do reports on the numbers of loans issued and the impact that it has in the communities of which these loans are made. And we can make that available to you.
Representative Jordan.
Okay, thank you. And I'm looking in the bill language. I don't see it. Is it listed in statute? Is there an administrative fee that MEDA would be able to take out of any of the work that they're doing?
Any of the Catalyst members who wants to answer that question? Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Juergens, I can't speak to this proposal that's in front of you, but I can speak to how our lenders that we work with through our program work. They basically keep the interest that is generated from the loans, and that's what helps underwrite their loan committees and their ongoing loan management and monitoring. For the loans that they do.
And just to add on to that, I just wanted to note for this committee, there's the base requirement for the market rate, interest plus, I believe, 4%, the way the emerging entrepreneur really works to fund the some of the CDFIs, almost all of them. So sometimes it becomes the question about reasonable terms, should I go to a bank and pay that cost, or should I go to a CDFI, but whereby we're not providing them with the additional support to help the underserved businesses? So those are questions that we'll have to discuss in the coming days as we talk about various financing mechanisms that we have through DID. I don't know if that helps. At this point, I think the members, I saw Mr. Jimenez, if you wanted to quickly respond.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I could tell you now is that the interest rates that will come out of the fund are going to be as small as possible as we can make them, as low as 4%. And this is money that would come into a fund. The reason MEDA is mentioned in this bill is because Catalyst Partners, MEDA is the fiscal agent for the partnership, but the actual funds will go into this joint fund called the Minnesota Inclusive Growth Fund. But I could assure you that the amount of time and technical assistance that we spend on every client is substantial. And even at a 4% interest rate, we're still having to raise funds for our organizations to be able to provide that technical assistance. So there's a lot more than just a percentage. I can assure you that none of our organizations are making money off of this. What we're trying to do is raise funds to be able to provide more funding to businesses across the state, which, mind you, we're actually coming to this with funding. We're still working with the philanthropic world and private donors to bring in funding. We're not just asking the state to start from zero. We're actually coming with commitments here as well.
Go ahead, Mr. McLean.
The way the fund is structured, this is really a request for capital. And so as the fund is structured, there'll be an origination fee that will be paid to each organization that originates the fund. I mean, originates a loan that will be sold into the fund. So the structure does not, when this is not a request for administrative fees, but the way that the structure, that the fund is, again, structured, is that there'll be origination fees that will cover the administrative costs of all the participants.
Representative Jogans, any follow-up before we go to the conclusion to the author of the bill?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Agbaje, any closing remarks?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I would just reiterate what a number of the testifiers spoke to today. This is really about an investment in our small businesses that are owned by our BIPOC community members. And, you know, this is an investment that I think the state should be making so that we can continue to show our support as these businesses also deserve our attention as they require the access to capital to not only sustain themselves, but also to grow. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So I renew my motion, House File 1999, be laid over for possible inclusion. So thank you to everyone who came and testified. Looking forward to more conversation in the coming days. With that, the next bill we have is House File 1460. Representative Greenman, please move your bill and introduce the bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move House File 1460 to be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I am grateful to be able to present 1460 to support the Neighborhood Development Center with an appropriation of $3,750,000 in 2022 and $750,000 in fiscal year 2023 to fund their work in assisting and supporting low-income and minority entrepreneurs and their small businesses. NDC has a 28-year track record of training, assisting, and lending to community entrepreneurs, and this grant supports their work as follows, and we'll get into it a little bit more with the testifiers. A one-time $3 million appropriation for high-touch, high-risk, character-based loan capital and loan loss reserve. $600,000 for small business programming, including training, lending, technical assistance, business services, and incubator programming, and $150,000 for outreach and training capacity building outside the 7-county metropolitan area. We have the president of NDC and one of our entrepreneurs here today, so I'll leave it to them to provide the detail about the funding request and the important work that they do. Before I do that, though, I want to highlight a few key reasons why I think this is an important investment for our state. NDC does critical work to empower low-income and BIPOC entrepreneurs to transform their neighborhood economies. They incubate and support small businesses through their comprehensive model of training and of the high-risk, high-touch lending and ongoing technical assistance. And it works. The businesses they support on average are in business on average 10 years, which is twice as long as the national and state average of 5 years. These businesses are strengthening their communities and our state. Because of NDC's work, there are 437 businesses operating in the metro area, employing 3,250 people. They have a statewide impact and are building capacity to support 4 communities in greater Minnesota, and part of this grant is looking to expand that. Each year, these businesses return $10.6 million to the state coffers in income taxes and sales taxes. It's a great return on the state's investment. And a Wilder study estimated that the total economic return for neighborhoods is estimated at about $93 million. Further, they've worked really hard and creatively to respond to the unique challenges that COVID-19 and the civil unrest have had on our local communities and local businesses, and particularly BIPOC businesses. Their work is needed now more than ever. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Renee Dosman, the president of NDC.
Ms. Dosman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Greenman. Renee Dosman, President of the Neighborhood Development Center. Thank you all for allowing us to be here today and for this opportunity to share with you the excellent work that NDC has accomplished and continues to accomplish during this past crisis of the last year. NDC believes in building communities and economies from within. We do this through 4 pillars, the first pillar being training. We offer a 12-week training program to entrepreneurs. We also do small business lending. If you can get a loan with a bank, you would not come to NDC. It's all character-based lending. And in addition, we do technical assistance, complete wraparound services for the entrepreneur. We help them with their setting up their businesses. We help them with marketing and communication, strategic planning, accounting services. And then finally, we have incubator spaces, and this differentiates us from some other organizations. We co-own the Midtown Global Market that's located in South Minneapolis, as well as incubators in St. Paul, the Frogtown Square, and a construction-only incubator space. We've done about 77,000 hours of technical assistance this past year alone. We've done $7.5 million in loans and grants. We typically do about 50 to 75 loans a year. This year, we've done 625 as a result of everything that's happened. And in a given year, we work with 800 people from the low to lowest income neighborhoods in the Twin Cities. Our successful business owners are 87% are BIPOC, 50% are women, and 81% are low to extremely low income. In 2020, like I mentioned, we deployed the 625 grants and loans, $7.5 million. But we also added a couple new programs that were unique for us this year. We added a program called Tech Pack, which allowed entrepreneurs to get their websites set up to help them with their social media, because when everything happened, we realized that they were not prepared to do delivery online. We also started talking about the whole entrepreneur. We can't just focus on their business. So we launched a program called Mindset Reset, which is in partnership with organizations and therapists to provide entrepreneurs with some much needed mental wellness support. And then in the first months of 2021, NDC's completed 52 PPP loans, totaling over $1.7 million. And we're also proud to be in partnership with the Lake Street Council to launch a new program called Money Matters. Coming after the unrest, I actually sat on the committee with some people here as well to distribute the funds that Lake Street Council received. And the biggest opportunity that we heard from those entrepreneurs is that they needed some help with their financials. So we've partnered with them to launch that program. We're excited about that. We've also continued, part of this funding that we're asking for is to continue our work in Greater Minnesota. We've done training programs in Duluth, Brainerd, St. Cloud, and Lower Sioux Indian community. The way that we do that is we actually give grants back to those organizations and into those communities. We've worked with several organizations there, and we give that back in grants, and then they get use of our materials, et cetera. I also want to touch, I'd also like to recognize our friends like Representative Baker. We're ready to renew that conversation that we started having about Wilmer. It's really nice to see Representative Hamilton here today as we've talked about what we'd like to do together in Worthington. So we're excited about those opportunities. I want to also touch upon the part of the bill, since we've had some discussion about the high touch, high risk character-based lending that we do. In the age of COVID and the civil unrest, our lending is much riskier, as you can imagine. However, by surrounding these businesses with technical assistance, these loans will indeed perform. Our request for $1 million towards a loan loss reserve allows us to leverage other lending sources while protecting the financial risk to NDC as an organization. I'd also like to mention that NDC received a grant from the Constellation Fund, and we're really proud of it. When you speak of ROI, Representative Juergens, they rated NDC with the highest ROI of any other organization that they looked at. As Representative Greenman mentioned, they said that our increased earnings to employees was around $25 million for NDC, so we're very proud of that. Lastly, I'd like to thank all the representatives who walked Lake Street with us this past year, especially you, Representative Haley. We truly appreciate it, and we'd love to have you all back. We have some exciting things happening in the market. And with that, one of our most exciting things that we're proud of for the market, I'll turn it over to Anthony Simmons. He's the owner of Soul to Soul Barbecue, Soul to Soul Smokehouse, that's located in Midtown Global Market. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Simmons. Welcome. And I know many of our members will be joining you for food shortly after we're done with session, hopefully. So please welcome to the committee and introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Renee. Also, thank you, Representative Gunman, for presenting this bill. My name is Anthony Simmons. I am an owner at Soul to Soul Smokehouse, soon to be open at the Midtown Global Market. NDC has done incredible work for myself and our business, from helping us get set with our licensing to graphic design to even finance. You know, a lot of times I try to do things all by myself, which, and you know, it's hard to be good at everything. So it was amazing just to have a team of people there to support us in each area of our business to where we're not making those early mistakes. It'll help us create some jobs. At least 8 to 10, you know, employees we'll be able to hire, and it'll also help us to grow and help in the community, which we're already doing. We're already doing catering for the Boys and Girls Club there on 38th in Chicago, to where their last vendor, you know, they had a lot of food that they were throwing out, and the end result, these families weren't eating. And so since we've been doing it the last month and a half, the demand is growing for more food. So at least these families that are being funded for the food, they're actually eating it. So they do incredible work, and I definitely couldn't have done it without NDC. So thank you, and I'll answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much. I will urge everybody to go find where Soul to Soul is and enjoy the great meal. So members, any discussions? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Dosman, for presenting today. It's good to see you. I'm wondering, in the way NDC works, I've forgotten this, Ms. Dosman, do you also require non-state match for any of your funds and any of your loans?
Ms. Dosman.
No, I did not do the talk while I'm on mute thing. We actually received a match for some of the Greater Minnesota work through Bremer Bank, a direct match for what we raised to give back to them. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, just generally, yeah. If you have other non-state funding.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. Sorry. Yeah, I get it now. I'm new to this, so non-state funding, I'm like, what does that mean exactly? But yes, we definitely get other state funding or non-state funding. I'd say, you know, a third of our budget is corporations and foundations. Another third is state and government. And then a final third is earned income that we earn on the loans and on our trainings and the work that we do. So it's about a third, a third, a third.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Dosman. Does any funding come from the city of Minneapolis in particular?
Yeah, we do some, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We do some technical assistance work with the city of Minneapolis. Yes, through their, I believe it's called their CPAP program.
Yeah. VTAP,
sorry, yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. We all know that this significant COVID relief bill passed out of the federal government last week, and it's such a big package, I think hard for all of us to unravel what that looks like in the end. But we do know that there'll be significant money coming into cities as well as the state. And just something I think to put on our radar, Chair Knorr, is to follow, you know, how much of that money can be directed to some of these redevelopment efforts, and would any of that flow to NDC or some of the other folks that we've heard from today?
We will certainly have some conversation on the federal funding and its impact on the economic issues. So I think that's something which we'll be requesting from DEED to highlight some of the federal funding coming through that are designated for business development and also workforce development. So thank you, Representative Haley.
Can I answer one question, too, that you asked Representative Haley? Could I answer another question that she asked?
Go ahead, Ms. Dosman.
We did, just so you know, NDC has come in front of this committee before and received money. It's very, what we're asking today is similar. The only difference is the loan amount based on what we talked about with the $2 million and then the $1 million in loan capital or loan loss reserve. But this is similar to what NDC has come and received from this committee in the past.
Thank you. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you, Representative Greenman. This question is to Ms. Dosman. Great job. You've already answered a couple of my questions by doing such a wonderful job at testifying and explaining your program.
Thank you.
One of my questions remaining is down on line 1.19, the $2 million for flexible lending based most critical needs. It says to make a business whole. What does it mean by making a business whole? And why would you need, you know what I mean? Can you explain that to me a little bit? Why are we making businesses whole and for what purpose?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually exactly some of the things that Anthony talked about in his testimony. We help them get their, you know, we're helping him right now get use his loan so that he can get his equipment, so that he can pay his employees, so that he can get his supplies to make them whole so that they can actually start their business off on the right foot. In addition, we are providing technical assistance to help them with everything for setting up his accounting system. We've had someone do that, setting up his helping him figure out and set up his social media accounts, so to make the business whole. As an entrepreneur myself, when I started, we started a restaurant in Brooklyn Park. We didn't have anyone to help us think through all those different things that come up for you as a business. So that's what we mean by making them whole and providing them with accessible funding that's based on their character and not their credit score.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Osman. Yes, I completely understand all that. I could still use some help with my restaurant.
Yeah, it's a labor of love, that's for sure.
So, yes, no, I just wasn't sure what that meant, and you've explained it very well. So thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, Chair Nar.
Thank you so much. With that, I wanted to give the opportunity to Representative Greenman to give her closing remarks and renew the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, you know, I want to let Mr. Simmons' business and all the businesses that the NDC has supported in this character-based financing and in all of the sort of, I think that they use the term wraparound support that they provide is really critical for the communities and the neighborhood economies. I also just want to note that this is, because of the great work they do, it has bipartisan support, the Senate author, the Senate chief author, Senator Housley. It's an investment in growing Minnesota's small businesses. It's an investment in local communities that have faced generations of underinvestment. It's critical. And it's an investment in expanding the successful model that they have to all corners of the state. So I think that this is a really good and smart investment in our business and small business workforce and all of the pieces that they do. So with that, I will renew my motion to move that 1460 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you so much, Representative Greenman, and to the testifiers on this bill. So Representative Greenman renews her motion, House File 1460, be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, we move into House File 2076. With Representative Olson, please introduce your bill, move the bill and introduce to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's House File 2079.
That's correct.
Okay, great. So I move that House File 2079 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll tell you a little bit about the bill and why we need it. So the Duluth Paper Mill was started up in 1987. Since that time, it has provided high wage earning livelihoods to hundreds of workers and their families while being a cornerstone business in the West Duluth community. The paper markets that the mill supplied have been dwindling in the past decade and sadly collapsed with the onset of COVID-19 pandemic. The mill has been permanently shut down since July 5th, 2020, in spite of the numerous cost-saving efforts to save it. The only viable solution to bring this facility back to life and continue to provide excellent employment for generations to come is to repurpose it to produce the types of recycled papers that are growing in demand. This comes with great capital expense, and House File 2079 can incent future owners to make this key investment. So the bill in front of us modifies the requirements of the 2019 Jobs Omnibus Law that appropriated a loan to a Duluth paper mill, by these ways. It increases the amount appropriated from the loan from $2 million to $3 million. It changes the purpose from supporting the operation of manufacturing and packaging to the conversion of the existing paper mill for the manufacture of new paper grades. It increases the amount the paper mill must invest in the project from $20 million to $25 million and changes a few dates for the investments to be made and shifts the time period for the funds to be available. And it lowers the number of full-time jobs the mill would need to retain in order to qualify for loan forgiveness. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to my testifier, Mr. Gary Worgan.
Mr. Worgan, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and your affiliation and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Gary Worgan. I'm the interim mill manager at the Duluth Paper Mill. So testifying before you today is really a story of my life. I am a 34-year employee at the Duluth Mill. Built my entire career and more importantly, built my entire family around the opportunity to work at a generational type of facility, which is, as you all know, is very rare in this day and age. During my time at the mill, I've been granted several opportunities, but probably one of the keys is really to watch the revitalization of the West Duluth community take place with having such a strong cornerstone business in place. One of the coolest things of my career is to watch the giving of the mill. And it's really, both an economic giving, from the individual people that have worked here, have shared their opportunity, but also the giving in terms of time back into the community with volunteer efforts, cleanup efforts, and many other types of things. So, and that's just partly what's been afforded with all this. As was stated, our mill was in a distressed market. We're heavily leveraged into retail advertising with the type of paper grades we made. And with the onset of COVID and the impact on retail markets, that was pretty much the death knell for the viability of our facility. As we look at where the future is for this mill, with significant capital investment in excess of $25 million, we can be made viable to produce recycled paper products in either the packaging or craft paper sectors. So when I say packaging, you can understand what a growth market that is with e-commerce and also with the movement towards recyclable type of paper products such as grocery bag and sack and things like that. Those markets are strongly growing. The other market that we are being considered for is actually in the area of tissue and towel, where that market is really making a very strong rebound as other forms of sanitary needs throughout the country have changed and headed towards a greener direction. Other positive green impacts of this potential rebuild is that the mill would contain a very much lower, as much as one-fifth of the energy footprint that we've had historically. And that seems to be a pretty strong fit for where future investment needs to go, in my opinion. So I think I covered most of the key points. The other thing to bear in mind, with $25 million plus of capital investment going into an operation like this, the spinoff of that has been felt very, very strongly, both with the idling of the mill, but also how that can levitate local businesses that supply very capital intensive business. And then certainly with reconstruction of the mill or key parts of the mill, the labor involved in that would see a great boon. That is expected to be a strong craft labor presence in the mill anywhere from 6 months to 18 months, depending on the nature of the rebuild. So with that, Chairman, I'd like to thank you and the committee for your time, and I can turn it over for questions or.
Thank you so much for your testimony, members, discussions or any comments or questions. Representative Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson, and thank you to the testifier. I guess something just struck me a little wrong about the initial presentation of this bill. And correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Olson, the statement that we should do this so that the business can make an investment in itself to promote itself to potential buyers. I guess if we're, and I'm guessing, you know, if it's bought, the company will stay in Minnesota and hopefully the jobs will stay in Minnesota. But there again, we're not guaranteed what a buyer might come in. I've seen it happen here in my own district with the refinery. Lots of good jobs and new owners come in and thoughts and plans change and we start to cut jobs or change our ideology about how we're going to run our operations. So, and I'm also guessing then on the flip side, that the ownership isn't necessarily going to sell their business at a loss. So we are retrofitting a factory to increase the value to somebody to make potential profit to a different company that might come in and change it. So I'm just wondering if you could comment a little bit more on that for me, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Knorr, and thanks for the question, Representative Franke. I mean, you're partially correct, but what I'll say is the mill has already idled. I'll let my testifier and perhaps Assistant Commissioner McKinnon will also chime in. So this, if you read in the bill language, it's for the Duluth paper mill. And what we're talking about here, and there have been potential buyers that have, you know, been in discussions about the type of operation we'd be doing. And so why we're here today is we had originally written this bill in a way that was specifically for the operation of Verso, and obviously Verso has idled, and we're looking at potential new buyers, and so it's for the operation of the Duluth Mill. It's, you know, similar to what we did in the 2019 Jobs Omnibus Bill, but making some changes to make these funds available to a new potential operator of the mill to do what specifically we lay out in the legislation. So partially, I get what you're asking, but I think because of the history of this legislation and where we're at, we're actually, it's about an investment in the mill and the further operation of the Duluth Mill. And maybe, I don't know if one of, if Gary, if Mr. Worgan would want to speak to that as well.
Actually, that was very well stated.
Mr. Worgan.
Thank you. That was very well stated. Yeah, the intention is that when and if a buyer comes in, takes over ownership of the mill and works towards rebuilding it, they would be in the commitment at that point and then would be able to get have the funds released, I believe. I don't think it's a preemptive release of funds.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Olson, am I correct then in stating that the commitment would then transfer with ownership, and would that be something that would be required upon sale?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Franke, I would maybe ask someone else to speak to that part of the sale, because, you know, this is, I mean, I guess, again, I'd say the spirit, this is the third time we've had to work on this legislation. You know, the goal here is to keep the jobs at the Duluth paper mill. That is what's written into the law. It's allowing the flexibility to change slightly into this, as we've talked about, a different paper grade. You know, so I don't know the details of the sale. I mean, that's not really, you know, I'm not privy to some of that, but I'm sure, you know, Mr. Worgan or perhaps someone else can chime in on that. But the way we're writing the bill, again, is just modifying the 2019 language. It's no longer going to be Verso operating it. And so we needed to be able to have this available for whoever the new manufacturer is at that paper mill to operate and have this incentive to them.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to make sure is we want to make sure to keep these jobs and keep that mill going at the best capacity that we can to keep those good jobs up there. So, yeah, maybe that's just something to look into going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was reading through this, so I may have found my answer to my question, but I'll ask it for the record. What's the number of jobs that we're talking about, the required number of jobs?
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. So it's 80 jobs, and I have to say I really appreciate the spirit of what you and Representative Frankie are asking these questions, because I care deeply about keeping these jobs in Duluth, and that's why I'm here. You know, 80, the average median household income in my district is $45,000. It's not a lot of money. So when you're talking about 80 jobs where your average is more than 60,000, that's a significant impact in my community. And so that's why I'm here for, you know, essentially continue to push to make sure we keep these jobs in Duluth. And one thing we didn't mention too is the ripple effect it has. You know, they're obviously a large company that uses our power. You know, there's ratepayers that are impacted by that. So it has a huge ripple effect on constituents, you know, tied to the mill in a variety of ways too. So I actually genuinely appreciate both you and Representative Frankie caring about keeping these good paying jobs in Duluth.
Mr. Chairman.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Olson, absolutely. I mean, I'm the chair of agriculture, and I have a strong passion and admiration for people in the timber industry also, and subsequently the paper industry. So you have my support on this. And again, doing what we can to keep those jobs there. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you so much to the testifiers and to the members for the questions. So Representative Olson, your closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've covered it nicely, and I appreciate the support. And I renew my motion that House File 2079 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you so much. With that, members, I don't think we have enough time to do House File 1630, which will be deferred to for Wednesday. We don't have any other issues before us, so the meeting for now is adjourned.